Welcome back to the AstroCast. I'm your host, Drew. Today is Tuesday, April 9th. We had the Great American Solar Eclipse yesterday. If you saw it, I hope it was amazing for you if you were in the path of totality. I had a couple of friends who were able to see it, and it was actually their first total solar eclipse, and they were indeed quite touched by the moment. So congratulations to them for being able to see their first total eclipse. It is really a special moment if you've never seen one before. As I said on last week's episode, I was able to see with my wife the total eclipse in 2017. We made a drive down to South Carolina. It was only about an hour's drive for us to get down and see it back then. Unfortunately, I was not able to make the trip this year. So we made do with what we had. So we went out on the back porch with our solar glasses, and we checked out what we were able to see, which was about 80% of the sun being covered up by the moon. And it was still really cool. I was able to take a few shots. I just did the basic, solar filter over the cell phone. So I had my Galaxy S24 and set it to a 10x telephoto zoom and got some pretty cool shots. I mean, I wasn't expecting anything incredible. If I were in a spot where I could see totality, obviously, I would have gone for some, better pictures. And in fact, I posted something on both of the more popular Facebook pages that I'm a member of. And I gave a piece of advice on Sunday night before the eclipse that I think a lot of people needed to hear. And I hope a lot of people got to hear because, the week up to the eclipse, all I saw were people asking questions about, how do I do this? How do I do that? How do I do this? How do I do that? And that's fine. That's what forums are for. They're there so people can ask questions. And that's what's great about our community is that we're able to exchange information back and forth and help each other out. And I really feel like the astronomy community is one of the very best community as far as hobbies go for being able to help each other out. I don't think I've ever seen a situation where somebody's asked a question and hasn't gotten, multiple responses from people offering suggestions on how to fix it. That being said, though, what I was warning people of is if they were still struggling heavily with how to photograph the sun properly leading up to the eclipse on, that Sunday afternoon, to perhaps consider foregoing photographing, particularly if you were in the path of totality. If you were lucky enough to be in the path of totality, don't miss a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to observe it by screwing around with technology for 4 minutes. And, this is coming from me, a guy who, absolutely loves technology, clearly. But it's a really special moment. And what the point I was making is there are going to be thousands upon thousands of incredible images from this solar eclipse that you're going to be able to view whenever you want. But if you missed totality because you were trying to find the right f-stop or the right shutter or the right bracket or what have you on your camera for the 2 to 4 minutes that you were able to witness it, then that's something that you can't get back. And I hope at least one person heeded that call and was able to maybe set that gear down and just really appreciate the moment and live in it. Because, in 2017, that was something that I'll never forget, being able to witness that with my wife. It really is a special moment when you see that shadow coming and everything goes dark. And it gets colder and, the birds go quiet. And I mean, heck, if you saw it, then I don't need to tell you. It's an incredible experience. I'm not a religious person, but if there's anything in the world I consider spiritual, it's probably seeing an eclipse. I put it up there with seeing the Milky Way for the first time, as far as, things that make me think that there's definitely more to life than what meets the eye. So yeah, very, very, very special experience. So if you got to see it, congratulations. If you didn't get to see it, don't think for a moment that it's going to be, you know, impossible to see one again until 2044. I know that you hear that a lot on the news, but the reality is somewhere on planet Earth every 3 years, there is a total eclipse. And people travel quite frequently to view them. That's not to say that, you know, it's easy to see one every 3 years. Obviously, you've got to have some money, but it's not unattainable. So if you weren't able to witness it this time, you know, perhaps 5 to 10 years from now, you will be in a different situation and you can make that happen. So if you weren't able to see it this time, you know, don't stress too much, and hopefully next time you will be able to see it. And who knows, you know, if you're younger, whenever is it 2042 or 2044, 2044, I think, whenever that rolls around, when the next big North American one is, there's actually one in a few years that's going to be up in a corner of Alaska, I saw, which is quite funny, you know, so just it goes to show you that they happen more often than you think. But yeah, you will have other chances to witness eclipses. So they're not as rare as the media would lead you to believe. So I hope everybody was able to enjoy it. I know I enjoyed the 80% that we got. Obviously, it didn't get dark here or anything like that. But it did kind of look like it was about 7 o'clock at night. You know, it was definitely a lot dimmer out, which was kind of cool. You know, my wife commented on that. She said it looked like the sun was going down early, you know, when totality rolled around, which was around 3:11 in the afternoon, which was pretty cool. And then I noticed we had two different types of solar eclipse glasses. I actually had my original ones from 2017. They were still in my truck's glove box, because I just put them in my glove box after the eclipse in 2017 and kind of forgot about them. And I said, well, I'll grab these next time there's a solar eclipse. And, you know, that's what I did. So, you know, years later, I grabbed them out. And then I had two more pair that I had bought from High Point Scientific a few months back in anticipation of this eclipse. And I realized towards the end that the original pair that I had from 2017, when you looked at the sun, it was orange, like I guess technically more natural. But then when you looked through the other pair, it was actually white. So that was kind of cool. So I guess they were using a different type of filter because one was orange and one was white. I did notice that the white one had more of a silver color to the filter, and the orange one was more of a black, kind of like a classic ND filter color to it, which was something unique. So with the fourth pair, I ended up cutting them up and using one of the lenses as the filter over my telephoto lens on my Galaxy phone. So I was able to take a photo because I couldn't find my super ND filter that I used back in 2017. Not that I really cared, honestly, because like I say, 80%, you know, it was cool, but it wasn't anything I'm like, oh God, I have to get, you know, incredible photos of this eclipse or anything like that. So I wasn't kicking myself or anything like that. I just snapped a couple with my phone and, you know, posting them, and I'm happy with that. Plenty of people got much cooler photos than I ever will of the eclipse. A friend of mine, Charlotte, shout out to her. She was able to witness her first one. She was actually up in New Hampshire, and I talked to her a couple of days ago, and she was actually in the 99% area, and I don't think she was quite aware of the difference between 99% and 100%, as a lot of people are not. I'm sure you guys probably know that if you're into astronomy, but, you know, this is a discussion that probably so many of us have had when you're trying to explain to people the difference between 99 and 100%. And like intuitively, if you're not an astronomer, you could see how it's easy to think, ah, come on, what's the big deal? 1%. But like, you know, knowing at what we do about eclipses, it's literally the difference between night and day. So 99% means that the sun is still out, essentially, you know, and 100% means it's going to get dark. You're going to be able to see the planets behind the sun. You're going to be able to see, you know, Venus and Jupiter and Mars. And it's really special. So it was super cool that she was able to see that. I'm glad that she drove that extra hour to go see it. I had another coworker who I don't think did drive the extra hour despite my pleas to get him to go. But, you know, I hope he enjoyed the 99%. In his defense, he did say that the traffic was going to be a nightmare and they don't have any major highways going to the area where he needed to go. I would walk if I was that close, but that's just me. So anyway, so enough about the solar eclipse. So why don't we go ahead and talk about what's been going on lately here in Charlotte as far as astronomy goes. So I was down at the observatory on Saturday night, which was quite nice. It was new moon, or I guess technically a couple days before new moon, but it was very, very nice out. And actually, first time I've been down there in a few months. I thought about it, and I hadn't been down since November, which was kind of shocking because I love going down to the observatory, but we had not had really good weather for a lot of the winter. And I tend to only go down to the observatory during new moon because I don't want to make, you know, the whole trip down there whenever, you know, the moon is out and bright, because I, you know, only go down there to image, obviously, because that's my dark sky site that I go to. So we went down on a Saturday night and I was able to catch up with my buddies, Rick and Jeff. Rick has been on the show, obviously. If you listen to, I believe it's episode 7, he is the director of the Gale H. Rigsby Observatory, which is home of the Charlotte Astronomers Club. And they actually own the company Dark Dragons Astronomy, which are obviously also good friends of the show. And they were talking to me about a really cool project they did recently. They did their largest install yet for a roll-off roof observatory. So somebody in New Mexico had built this massive building that had, I believe it was 13, it was 11 or 13 piers inside of it, but the building itself is huge. And the guy who had set it up originally had used, like a barn door motor of sorts to roll it off, and it did not work at all. And the guy had invested all this money into building the observatory, and he was actually renting out the pads for the observatory. So he was freaking out. He didn't know what to do. So he was able to get in contact with Dark Dragons, and they came out and they installed their little motor. And I say little motor because it's tiny in comparison to what most observatories have. And within a couple hours, they had it, you know, up and running, and the thing is just rolling off like butter. So they were showing me video of that, and my jaw was just dropping watching this gigantic roof roll off because of this tiny little motor that they have attached to the side of the building. So really impressive stuff that they're doing. So if you or anybody that you know ever needs help with observatory automation, they are definitely the guys to talk to. They're working on a lot of different projects, but I guess their big product right now is obviously the roll off roof automation products for being able to roll your roof off. And that is kind of, you know, their big install right now. So if you ever need to, you know, get one of those installed, I will leave their contact info in the show notes. And I can actually attach some of their media info as well, so you can have a look and see what I'm talking about. They're working on several other products as well, and it's all really cool stuff. I think they're just really top-notch stuff. Whenever they started about a year ago, I don't know how long they've been doing it, but whenever I met them about a year ago, I sat down and talked with them for a good while, and I said, man, you guys are really onto something good here. And now here we are a year later, and they're, you know, doing it and installing stuff and going around the country and setting up observatories, and they're doing it, man. They really are doing it, and they're doing a very good job. And they're going to be going up to NEAF in a couple of weeks here. And if you don't know, that's the Northeast Astronomical Forum, which is the, you know, the big show in North America where all of the astronomy companies kind of get together and show off all their new products for the year. And it's a super cool place to be. And I was actually invited to go, and I wanted to go up there, obviously, to do the podcast so I could walk around and interview everybody. Unfortunately, it was very short notice, and I have some personal matters that I have to attend to that week, so I was not able to make it happen. But I talked to Jim Jeff, and we're kind of working on a plan where we think we're going to be able to kind of work something out where me and him are going to team up together for a special episode of the podcast and maybe be able to work together so we can have a little bit of, you know, kind of live interviews happen on the floor from Neve, where me and him will be able to, you know, talk live together while he walks around on the floor and interviews people. So we are going to be working on that. So stay tuned for that. And hopefully we will be able to bring you some really cool stuff from Neve here in a few weeks. So stay tuned for that as well. So while we were out there, I started with M42 because, as we talked about last week, I finished my ultimate wide field rig, and that Friday, so yeah, I guess last Friday, I finally finished kind of putting all the pieces together, except one piece, the darn camera rotator. It said 17.5 millimeters wide on the product info. It's actually 13.5 millimeters wide, so it's 4 millimeters short from being perfect back focus, which is driving me insane because now I need a 4 millimeter M42 tube that is female on both sides. I think I may have found something that'll work on eBay, so I went ahead and ordered it, but I don't know for certain that it's going to work. I got my fingers crossed that I can make it happen. Cross your fingers for me that it will. But anyway, I got everything else working. I just removed the camera rotator for now, and I'm using my regular extension tube on the back. So I pointed it at M42, and we were doing 60-second exposures at F2.8. I can do it at F2, but I do notice a little bit of coma in the stars. If I stop it down just one time to 2.8, everything looks super sharp. So 2.8 seems to be the sweet spot for my copy of the lens. My buddy Braxton, who has the same setup, he's able to go at F2 and he seems to get fine stars. So I think it really just varies on which version. Well, I'm not going to say version, but what your specific copy of that Rokinon lens is like as far as, you know, how well it's going to produce stars at F2. So what I'm ultimately going to do, I think, is just shoot at F2.8. I suppose what I could do is do dual narrowband at F2 and then, you know, swap out to an L Pro at the end of the imaging session, stop it down to F2.8 and then take like a 5 minute exposure of just, you know, the stars essentially. And then, you know, do a star removal in PixInsight and then lay the 2.8 stars on top so I could get a really nice, pretty picture of the stars on top while having that F2 nebulosity. So that'd probably be the ideal thing to do. And since I have that filter drawer, it should be pretty easy to do as well. So that's probably what I'm going to end up doing because the difference between F2 and F2.8 really is big. F2 gathers a lot more light than F2.8 does. And I got F2 for a reason, and that's so I can, you know, gather as much light as possible. So I'm going to plan on doing that. So, but anyway, M42, it was very wide field. So I was able to actually get the, Horsehead and Flame Nebula and M42. We were doing 60 second exposures and man, I was just blown away with the quality. So just in one 60 second exposure, so much nebulosity. We were in a Bortle 4 sky. I had my L Pro filter in. So, you know, essentially a broadband light pollution filter in Bortle 4 skies and just really, really clean, crisp images with tons of nebulosity. And it just has me so excited for my trip in June out to the dark skies. I think this thing is going to perform amazingly. So it was up for probably, I think we got about 90 minutes on M42. I was so busy on Sunday, I didn't even have a chance to process the photos. I haven't processed them yet. I got all the subs on my USB thumb drive, and I really want to process them because I got some great shots. But I did M42 first, and then after that got, you know, into the light dome, you know, down near the horizon, I went ahead and moved over to Markarian's chain. And man, that was something else. So that was in a darker part of the sky, more towards the zenith. And by that time in the night, it was significantly darker. We were at actual astronomical darkness. So I moved up to 2 minute exposures at F2. 2.8 rather. I still had the L Pro in. I have not been able to test out the L Extreme F2 filter that I purchased yet, and I'm dying to test it out, but just haven't had a chance to yet. So I think whenever I put that in, I'm going to be able to take much longer than 2 minute exposures, obviously, but I don't want to blow it out. And since it's a, you know, broadband filter, if I go more than, you know, 2-3 minutes at F2.8, I'll probably end up blowing the subs out. So I went to Mark Arian's chain, and with a 2 minute exposure on that lens, the number of galaxies and color on not just the, you know, the galaxies, but the stars was incredible. We were all looking at the tablet as the subs were coming through, and we were counting just so many binary stars. It would have been an excellent way to determine the seeing on that night or any given night, because you could really zoom in on these binaries and see, you know, how close two stars were. And then you could also see, you know, red shifted galaxies. They were very clearly visible, which was really, really cool. And then just like you say, tons and tons of galaxies are in that area. So Mark Arian's chain obviously is an obvious one, but just outside of, you know, the eyes and the Virgo galaxy and the obvious ones that are in that area, there are just hundreds of other galaxies that appear. And it occurred to me after I did, you know, we got well over an hour on that one, but it occurred to me later, I was doing the plan in ASI Air, which essentially just says, okay, I want to do 2 minute exposures and I want to do it 100 times. Go ahead and do it. But as we've talked about in previous shows, you can do electronic assisted astronomy also. And when you're doing that in the ASI Air, you do get the option to save every frame individually. So you can still use those, you know, in PixInsight and process the image just like you would from a plan. So what would have been much cooler to do while I'm hanging out at the observatory and have friends around would have been to say, let's do EAA instead, and let's take 100 exposures, but, you know, stack them as we go, because then we would have been able to see the fainter galaxies start coming out one by one. And that could be something just really fun to watch if you're in a really dark location and you have a really wide field lens like that, and you're just, you know, in an area of the sky that's packed with galaxies. You know, that could be just silly fun. So I'm thinking, like, take a 10 minute exposure, okay, with, you know, like an L Pro filter, so you can, you know, get a lot of the light pollution filtered out. And then take that on, I think it's astrometry.net, if I'm not mistaken, the website that allows you to plate solve if you upload an image, and I'll link it in the show notes. But basically, there's a website where if you take any of your exposures, it will plate solve it for you and then annotate the image and show you, you know, the names of any galaxies or objects that are in the area, right? And then you can see every one of those galaxies as they appear and know exactly what you're looking at. So that could be a really fun way to spend the night. You know what I mean? So something that I'm definitely going to do next time I go down, if we get another chance to, during galaxy season. You know, we're getting close to mid-April now. So 2 o'clock in the morning, Milky Way's starting to rise. So we are right around the corner from nebula season at this point. And I personally am very excited about it, because this rig is just, you know, made for capturing nebula. In fact, I renamed it Rogue Grabber in the settings. So it's been a purpose built for getting Rho Ophiuchus. I always say it wrong on the show, but yeah, for grabbing Rho, that's what I've made it for, because that's going to be my number one goal when we get out to our dark sky in June. Secondary target is going to be the Blue Horsehead Nebula. So I hope to get that one as well. With the 135, I think that'll frame up pretty good. And then my 80ED, which is my doublet. I guess technically it's a triplet because we've got the reducer in there. I actually did go ahead and order a second astronomy camera. So I have been talking about that for probably 3 weeks on the show now, maybe four, and I've struggled mightily on which one to get because there are so many great cameras out there to choose from that come at so many different price points. And ultimately, what I decided on came down to the sampling. So I really couldn't find a camera that sampled properly with the 135 lens. Pretty much everything is going to be undersampled with the 135 just because it's so wide. That being said, though, the shots look really good with the 294 MC Pro. So I'm pretty okay with using the 294 on that setup. And if I end up using that as the main camera for that setup, I'm perfectly fine with that. So when I went to go get the secondary camera, my thought was, okay, let's see if we can buy for the bigger rig. So I was thinking to myself, well, if I'm buying for my bigger telescope, why not look for something that can get me more reach? Because my 294 has a wider field of view, obviously. And so then I started looking at astronomy.tools, which is an excellent website that will let you put in any details that you have as far as what type of telescope you have and what type of camera you were looking at. And it will tell you if you are oversampled, undersampled, or right in the green as far as, you know, well sampled. And when I say sampled, I mean that the pixel size matches up well with the focal length. So your details will look nice and crisp whenever you're looking at the photo when it's finished. Won't appear too blurry. And it won't appear too, you know, blocky. So anyway, what I ended up going with was actually the ASI 585 MC Pro. So that is the new budget cooled camera from ASI. It actually was the only one for my ADED that ended up in the green as far as under and oversampling is concerned. With okay seeing conditions, which is what I usually have here in Charlotte. And what's great about it is it actually gives me a much tighter field of view, which I'm actually pretty excited about because it'll give me a closer up view of a lot of the targets that I like to shoot. And then, like I say, if I want a wider field of view, I can always just throw the 294 on, you know? So that's going to be awesome for me because, you know, I'll be able to get a closer look at galaxies, for example. I could always take my reducer off and then put the 585 on there and get an even closer look because I believe it's near 600 mil focal length. I think it's an almost 600 focal length if I take the reducer off, if not maybe 560, but 448 millimeters with the focal reducer. And then the 585 MC Pro, it's got great resolution. There is, you know, no dark current or amp glow that you have to worry about with this camera, which is something I'm excited about because amp glow is something that I always have to battle with the 294. So it'll be nice to have a newer camera that you do not have to struggle with that on. And like I say, the price was right. So you really can't argue with that. So very, very excited about that. It was on back order. So I guess the next group of shipments are going to be in late April. I got it from Agena Astro. I think all the sites were sold out at the moment, including ZWO. So I went to Agena just because I've ordered a lot of stuff from them lately and they've been great to me. So I decided to go ahead and give them some more of my business. I've got a filter to return early on when I was looking for filters for the wide field rig. I bought a 2-inch ZWO duo band filter. I don't know what I was thinking, but I already have a 1.25 inch version of that exact same filter. And I, for whatever reason, forgot that you need an F2 version. So, yeah, I don't know what I was thinking when I bought that, but it was $150 of something that I absolutely don't need. So I got that from High Point Scientific. I emailed them the other day, and thank goodness they have great customer service. They sent me a return label, no questions asked, and said, absolutely send it back in, and we'll refund you right away. So shout out to them. Another reason, guys, that I always say, you know, Amazon is not where you want to go to buy your high ticket items for astronomy gear. Go to High Point Scientific, go to Agena Astro, go to B&H Photo. You know, the real astronomy companies is where you want to go. First Light Optics, if you're in the UK, you know, check out the reputable astronomy companies, because Amazon is not going to take care of you when something breaks or something doesn't go your way. And, you know, places like Agena and High Point, they really will take care of you. And especially if you're a returning customer, if they see that, you know, you've given them business over the years, they're going to take care of you. So, you know, start building that relationship early, and they're going to make sure that, you know, they get you to come back. So there is something to be said for having a good working relationship, you know, with your vendor. And if, you know, astronomy gear is not cheap, so if they can keep you coming back by making you happy, by, you know, taking the $150 filter and, you know, giving you full credit back for it because you don't need it, and they understand why you don't need it, then that's great, because they know that you're going to come back and buy the next filter that you do need from them. So like I say, you won't get that from Amazon. So, you know, next time you go to buy some gear, definitely check out Agena, check out High Point, or, you know, whoever you like. Just don't go to Amazon. You know, go to Amazon for things like dew heaters and, you know, certain other things. I suppose like a guide scope would be okay. I named some of the things on last week's show that are okay to buy on there. You know, battery packs are okay to buy on there. You know, very certain basic things I feel like are okay. But I'm telling you, if I was buying a mount or a telescope or a filter, I would not go anywhere near Amazon. Nope. Wouldn't even think about it. Maybe for like a UVIR cut filter, I would. But if I was buying like a $300 filter, I wouldn't go anywhere near Amazon. I wouldn't even think about it. So just something to think about. So yeah, other than that, we did Orion, obviously. We did Markarian's Chain. Got to meet a few new people. There was a new member down at the observatory that night. It was his first time down. There's actually two new members. There was a lady down there who had her first telescope out, which is always cool to see. She had a Celestron. It wasn't a Newtonian. It was a refractor. It was one of the, what do you call the really long refractors? Here, let me go look it up real quick. Well, I guess you just call it a an F11 refractor. So it's just a higher f-stop refractor because it's got the higher focal length, but better for viewing the planets with than you would for something like a better than something like a you know, deep sky type Newtonian. You would use it for viewing the planets. And so I was able to help her out a little bit with figuring out how to get her tripod properly set. And it was nice because, you know, everybody chipped in to show her how to set up her telescope. And I think she had a good time. Whereas the other guy, he had the C-Star S50 from ZWO, which is their very popular smart telescope, which is an excellent entry level telescope. That's only $500, kind of hard to beat. I'm not a big fan of them just because you don't really learn too much with a C-Star. And I am a big fan of learning what you are doing with astronomy. However, that being said, as I've said on many episodes before, if all you want to do is get a pretty picture that you can post online, the C-Star is kind of hard to beat for $500. You're not going to be able to, you know, get anything else that's going to, you know, do it for you for that cheap. So it was cool seeing one of those because I haven't actually seen one in purpose. Or in person, I should say. And he said he is actually in the process of doing an equatorial conversion on it. I guess it's not really a conversion. He's going to be mounting it to an equatorial mount so he can do longer exposure tracking with it, which should be pretty cool. And then he also had the dwarf telescope. So he had two smart telescopes, which is interesting. But me personally, I probably would have taken all that money and bought a really nice equatorial mount, like a CM26 or an EQ6R, something like that, or, you know, even an AM3 or AM5. Well, I guess you couldn't get an AM5 for that kind of money, but, you know, I would have probably gone with an equatorial mount and then slowly added on, just because they're so much more flexible down the road. And, you know, for a beginner, you're going to have your mind blown the first time that you look at an exposure from a C-Star. But you know, pretty soon after, when you start getting serious into astrophotography, you are going to see the limits of the quality that you run up against with something like AC Star. And you're not going to be able to really, you know, do things like large format prints with that telescope. I mean, you can do large format prints, but the quality is not really going to be there. And we were talking about me and my friend who went with me to the observatory. We're talking about quality over quantity. And that was a discussion that we both are big fans of in all things in life. And, you know, even in our years, we were talking about how it's more important to have quality years in life over quantity years in life. And that's really important because, unfortunately, he recently found out his father got a bad diagnosis, and I won't get into specifics, but he's still waiting on some more information. And this is going to be one of those cases where he might have to make a really hard decision. And it might come down to one of those situations where he's got to choose whether to live a longer period of time with a much lower quality of life or a shorter period of time with the same quality of life that he is accustomed to. And the guy's not even going to think twice about it. He wants to, you know, live with the same quality of life that he has always been accustomed to. And me and him are very alike in that way. And, you know, it's the same way with us and our hobbies. You know, we would rather have quality over quantity. So that's my personal thoughts and feelings on it. And all of my heart and wishes go out to him for a, you know, healthy recovery and, you know, just hoping everything ends up working out. It's not all, you know, dark and bleak. We don't know, you know, what the end result's going to be yet. There's still more questions to be answered. So really hoping that we get some good news in that regard. This is the father of my oldest friend in the world, for context. So, you know, me and him have known each other since the first grade. So he was a father figure in my life coming up. So hope that everything ends up working out for him. So we also, you know, sat back in our zero gravity chairs, which is something that I want to talk about. With the nebula season upcoming, there's going to be, you know, a chance for a lot of stargazing, which is something that I always love doing, which is just kicking back and watching the skies, particularly if you're in a really dark area. So anytime that you get to make a trip out to a dark site, you know, you're going to set all your gear up and you're, you know, if you're like me, it's going to be mostly automated once you get everything set up. And there will be times when you're obviously going to get up and check and make sure you're, you know, subs are running smoothly, or you're going to change to a new target after a few hours and those sorts of things. But in between, there's going to be a lot of downtime where you can look up at the sky and just observe. And while that's happening, you want to be comfortable. The first few times when I got back into astronomy big time, that we went and watched meteor showers, I remember coming home with terrible, terrible cricks in my neck because I used regular, like the Bernie Sanders style folding chairs that you can just kind of flip out and sit down in and then, you know, crick your neck back and look up at the sky. And that is not something that you want to be looking up at the sky all night with. So what we ended up doing before we went down to our dark sky site last summer is me and my buddy went in half on a set of zero gravity chairs. So they're zero gravity lawn chairs. And these are one of the few things I actually do recommend purchasing on Amazon because they do sell really good ones for a very fair price. I think we paid about $100 for the pair of them. And you can spend a lot more or a lot less depending on, you know, if you want to get super high quality ones or, you know, much cheaper ones. We kind of went for the middle ground on this and we're quite happy with them. They're very comfortable chairs. But what's cool about them is if you've never sat in a zero gravity chair, basically you are able to completely lean back to where your legs are basically like they're in a recliner at home, and your head is, you know, perpendicular to the ground. So you're able to look straight up at the sky. And when you're at a dark sky, this is just incredible because you're able to stare up at the zenith. And whenever you're doing something like watching a meteor shower, oh man, forget about it. It's the best chair in the world to have. So anytime we go down to the observatory, it is a foregone conclusion that we're bringing those two chairs. And we definitely bring them when we go on our dark sky trip. And I would really encourage anyone who is big into astronomy to get yourself one of these chairs. And if you have a friend, you know, that maybe partakes in the astronomy with you as well, you can go in on a set of them because they are often sold in pairs. You can buy, you know, two of them for cheaper than you can buy an individual one. So if you go in half, you can, you know, get each, put in $50 and get one. And, you know, ours came with a lumbar pillow and a neck pillow so you can get nice and comfortable. And man, I love these chairs and they're perfect for stargazing. So they've lasted, you know, a good full year so far, and they're holding up very well. And I'm excited to bring them out to the dark sky site in June and bring them out for, you know, a second season. So definitely looking forward to that. And if you don't have one, I highly recommend you get one. One tip though, get yourself a blanket or a towel to put on the back of the chair, particularly to stop bugs, because the dark sky site that we go to, man, it has like military strength bugs out there. It's crazy. I guess they're called no-see-ums or something along those lines. I don't know what the actual scientific name is for the bugs, but these bugs are everywhere. We got the candles that you burn. We got the little circular coil things that you light that slowly burn. And we must have sprayed ourselves with 4 cans of spray over the 3 nights that we were there, you know, recoating ourselves every hour on the hour. And then, you know, like I say, laying towels on the back of the chairs because they will go through the back of the chair and through your shirt to eat your back. So if you ever have bug problems, definitely make sure to remember to lay a blanket or a towel on the back of the chair because it is breathable material and they will get through there. So that's something I'm still looking into how to solve. We absolutely love our dark sky site, but we have not solved the bug problem yet. If you guys have any ideas for how to deal with those bugs, I would love to hear them. So feel free to shoot me an email at ruastrocast@gmail.com, and I would love to hear them. I guess one idea that I have is I'm not even joking, a beekeeper suit without the headpiece, obviously, because I want to still be able to see the stars. But maybe if we could do like the the suit itself with the drawstring around the neck area, and then, you know, just obviously bug spray around my face and head as best I can, so I can still view the stars. Maybe that would keep them out. I don't know how breathable that material is. If it was, you know, so hot that I'd be pouring sweat, I definitely would not want to do that because it is a very hot place where we're going. But if anyone has any ideas, please let me know, because like I say, the mosquito repellent and the coil burner things, it only does so much. It helps a little bit, but they still come at us. So still searching for ways to keep those darn bugs away on our dark sky trip. Have you guys ever seen anything weird when you're looking up at the stars? I know you probably have. I mean, I have. I've seen, you know, a lot of weird stuff over the years being into astronomy and looking up at the stars. I've seen a million satellites. I can, you know, spot a satellite from a mile away. I know what satellites are. But occasionally we do see odd things. You know, sometimes I think it's more than likely something that's explainable. I'm very much a skeptic, but every now and then I see something odd that kind of makes me scratch my head. And if somebody is with me that also sees it, it definitely makes me scratch my head. And we had one of those on Saturday night. So there's a dirt road that you take to get to the observatory. And about every hour or so, we like to walk down that dirt road just to stretch our legs and warm up because it gets very cold out. And it's, you know, it's a beautifully dark out there. So you can just kind of look up while you're walking and enjoy the dark. And while we were walking back, I looked up and I saw a satellite, and I just looked over to Chris and I said, "Hey, look, man, check out the satellite." And we were looking up at it as we were walking, and I noticed, or thought I noticed, that it looked like it veered to the left a little bit and then kind of went back to its original position and kept going forward. And then it looked like it veered to the right a little bit and then went back to its position. And I thought to myself, you know, probably just an optical illusion. I didn't even say anything to Chris about it. But then a moment later, it looked like it kind of jerked to the left a little bit. And that's when I said, "Did you see that?" to Chris. And he looked at it and he didn't say anything yet. And then it looked like it kind of wildly jerked to the left and then to the right. And it continued to do this. And it looked like it was like moving hard left and then back and then hard right and then back and then hard left and then back. And it kept doing that until it got behind the tree line where we couldn't see it anymore. And then we tried to catch up and get, you know, in front of that tree line to where we were back out into the open field, but we couldn't see it anymore. It was already gone. That was a really odd one. And I, you know, like I say, I've seen a lot of odd stuff over the years, but that was one of the odder ones, I must say. And I don't know if there is an optical illusion that can cause you to see satellites that look like they are moving, you know, in different directions than a straight line. Obviously, I know that they can appear to be curving in a, you know, a gentle slope, because they do often curve in a gentle slope. But this literally looked like it was almost like a zigzag, for a lack of better words. And it was a perfectly clear night. There was not a cloud in sight anywhere. So it definitely wasn't clouds. The seeing was phenomenal. So I really don't know what to chalk it up to. So if anyone has any idea what I may have seen that night, it was near the zenith. I couldn't tell you the coordinates. I can say it was probably around 10:30 p.m., and it was north of Ursa Major. So I think I took a video of it. You know, if anybody was super interested in it, I could give you a time stamp on it. And if you are super interested, feel free to email me, ruastrocast@gmail.com. I had my red filter on and I haven't even gone back and look at the video yet because I assume I didn't get anything good. But yeah, it was odd, and it was odd enough that I figured I would mention it to you guys. But, if you've got anything weird that you've ever seen, I would also love to hear about that. And I'd love to read a couple of them, from astronomers' point of views, because, you know, we hear a lot of people who probably see stuff that we can easily explain, you know, like satellites, obviously, weather balloons, things like that. But I love whenever you hear an astronomer see something that they can't explain, because then you know it's something out of the ordinary. So if you've ever seen something like that, I want to hear about it. So shoot me an email, ruastrocast@gmail.com. If you've ever seen anything odd or out of the ordinary, I want to know about it, because that was a weird one. I've seen a couple other things over the years. I won't get into all of them right now because this isn't that kind of show, but I just thought I'd mention what I did see Saturday night. got really cold for an April night in Charlotte. Usually we don't get too cold in April, but it got down to, you know, I think about 41 degrees that night. And by about 1 a.m., we were pretty much cooked. I had a couple hours on Markarian's chain and we were pretty frozen. Everybody else had packed up and gone home at that point. So we decided we were going to go ahead and pack it in for the night. So we broke down the gear and packed it all up in the nice little trolley that we have, which is something that we discovered after, you know, probably our third or fourth trip before we were making, you know, probably six trips back and forth to the truck carrying all the gear. You know, two pieces at a time to the truck and then all the way back, which is quite a long walk through our field. But then we found out that there is actually a really nice like wheelbarrow that you can use to carry all your gear in. So if you're a member of an observatory and you carry all your gear back and forth, make sure you ask the director if they've got a wheelbarrow or a trailer that you can use, because they very well may have one and you're just unaware of it if you're anything like me. I wanted to mention also, I didn't do a recommendation last week because the episode ran so long. It didn't really occur to me to put one in just because we were already at about 90 minutes. So I kind of skipped over it last week, but that was an anomaly. We will continue doing recommendations, and I do have a good one for you this week. So this week I am going to be recommending a website. It is a really good website for resources, in fact, and they are actually friends of the show. I believe I've mentioned them once or twice before on the show, but I don't think I've directly plugged their website, and I would like to do that at this time, and that would be threesistersastronomy.com, and that is the number 3 sistersastronomy.com. And if you check them out, they actually have a really cool website where you can look at their work. They've got a ton of great astrophotography images that they have taken, but they also have a phenomenal resources page where you can find all kinds of awesome information on imaging, processing, observing, software, clubs near you, various sites, you know, friends of Three Sisters, and we are one of them. So definitely check them out. So I definitely really like what they're doing over there. And they have an awesome site with just tons of resources on it. I think a lot of us kind of get stuck looking at the same couple of web pages for astronomy. I know I'm guilty of that. I kind of tend to go to the same places over and over again, but there are other resources out there that can give you some fresh takes on things. And Three Sisters is one of them. They also have an awesome Instagram where they post all of their latest stuff. Just remember, it's Three Sisters. That's the number 3, not spelled out. So the number 3sistersastronomy.com. So check that out. I will put them in the show notes as well. As far as NEEF goes, I mentioned this a little bit earlier. I really wanted to go because, like I say, Jeff and Rick did invite me to go, but I couldn't make it happen just because of pre-existing arrangements that I have to take care of. However, I am going to put it on my calendar for next year so I can go. That's going to be on the agenda. So you can definitely count on the AstroCast having a presence at NEEF 2025. So if they end up doing it, which, you know, if history says anything, they most likely will, I am planning to be there next year. So I want to give a giant thank you to Jeff and Rick again from Dark Dragons Astronomy. You can find their website in the show notes as well for, you know, doing everything that they have done for the show and, you know, looking forward to the future that we are going to have with them as well. Again, those guys are awesome and they are doing some incredible work in the world of astronomy and observatory automation. So if you have a need for it, definitely check them out. So guys, that's going to pretty much do it for this week. I hope you don't mind too much. I just wanted to catch up with you, give you a little bit of insight as to what's been going on in my world as of late. The last few weeks has been really weird for me. I don't need to tell you, but our 2 kitty cats passed away and that was really rough, but I'm getting back in the swing of things. I'm feeling pretty good. Finally got to do some imaging. I got my new rig all built and ready to roll, and you know, things are looking up. So I'm quite happy about that. The eclipse has come and gone. Seen a lot of, you know, awesome photos from that. And I, like I say, I really hope a lot of you guys got to experience and enjoy that incredible moment. So thank you so much for listening to this week's show. I am Rue, your host with the AstroCast. We will be back next week with another episode and clear skies.
All right, so this week I have a joke for you. And it's funny because only astronomers will get the joke. So guy's talking to his friend and he says, last weekend I was out imaging something. And the guy's friend looks at me and says, oh yeah, what were you imaging? Guy looks back and he says, I don't know, M something.